Good morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. We're going to return to Yada's creative testimony. We had taken a quick journey into Yeshayahu, one of the prophets, in fact, the most prolific of the prophets. That means Yah saves. It's been corrupted to Isaiah 60:20, where we read, Yahweh shall exist for you as eternal and everlasting light. The days of mourning over death shall be finished and fulfilled by way of restitution, way of reconciliation. Yah is light, and with light there is no more mourning, there is no more death. When you exist as light, you become eternal. That's why it is eternal and everlasting, Olam, or light. Because light, time simply exists on light. There is no darkness. There is no death. There is nothing but energy, pure energy and eternity when one is associated by light. And Yah uses light as a means of reconciliation because he fills the dark recesses of our souls with his light. So our union with Yahweh Spirit, which causes us to be adorned in the set-apart Spirit's garment of light, which was the subject of the previous statement in Yeshayahu, is eternal, illuminating time itself. That is the essence of Haya, which is the Hebrew word for existence. From the perspective of science, this is precisely what light accomplishes. Einstein discovered, and others have confirmed, that light defines time, illuminating what it means to be eternal, existing in the past, present, and future simultaneously. Light is a pure form of energy, the universal constant. At least it was thought to be the case. But while there are aspects of light that are especially revealing in this regard, there is the potential now that the speed of light is not a constant. We have discovered quite recently that the speed of light has been diminishing over time and may have diminished substantially. What this does, if it is continued to be affirmed as true, is it would have us have an entirely different perception of time. So whether God said, let there be light, and light existed, or he is light because of the way the Hebrew pronouns were deployed in this particular statement with Elohim Amar, which is the Almighty said, Haya, let there exist, let there be light, and light, which is from Or, came to exist, Haya, or that he is light. He was speaking of how light, the first thing he created, was synonymous with his nature, and how his nature would lead directly to our salvation and to life. Yah exists to enlighten us, to shed light upon the path to him, so that we might become like him and thus resemble light ourselves. And this is why Yahweh completed his opening of Bereshith Torah declaration with the Almighty, which is from Elohim, Saw, Ra'ah. Now, you can use Saw because with light there is the ability to see. Without light, there is nothing to see. And Ra'ah is not just the Hebrew word for to see, and you know, I used saw here as past tense, but in Hebrew there is no past, future, or present tense. Every verb in Hebrew exists throughout time. Hebrew verbs are like light. The past, present, and future exist simultaneously in a Hebrew verb. And the reason that Hebrew verbs, the action of the language, is not stuck in time and resembles light is because Yah's Torah testimony, which is what we're reading here, resembles, is a representation of God himself. And so since God simply exists, he was, he is, he will be, the language he chose to communicate with us, all of the verbs were, are, and always will be true. So the Almighty saw, perceived, and regarded, had the perspective and came to understand, appreciated the fact that the light was good. Or tabab, pleasant, cheerful, and agreeable, of a higher nature, beautiful, valuable, beneficial, generous, and prosperous, and thus reliable and true. The term tabab here is from Tob. Tob is the term that God uses not only to describe himself, but also his Torah. And that should not also be a surprise, because the Torah is the representation, the manifestation of Yahweh in our world. And Yah calls his Torah Tob. He calls himself Tob. He calls light Tob. All of these things, from God's perspective, God presents himself as pleasant, cheerful, and agreeable, beautiful, valuable, beneficial, generous, reliable, and true. That's how God presents himself as Tob. He says exactly the same thing of his Torah, that his Torah is pleasant, cheerful, and agreeable, beautiful, valuable, beneficial, generous, and prosperous, and thus reliable and true. And he says the same thing of himself. And God separated light from darkness. Here the interesting term is actually bien. Again, God used Elohim, which means Almighty, the Mighty One. And here is the term badal, separated, and bien, for the purpose of enhancing understanding light from darkness. Everything that God presents in his Torah guidance and his instruction is designed for separation. For example, the covenant was cut through division, separating it from the things of man. To be part of the covenant, you must set yourself apart from the things of man and unto God. To be part of human institutions, to embrace religion, patriotism, and politics, you are separated from God. And so separation of light from darkness is a principal theme throughout the Torah. It is God's way of saying that if you want to be associated with me, you'll be associated with light. If you want to be disassociated from me and to be associated with human institutions like religion and politics, you'll be associated with darkness. Those are your choices, but it is a choice. You can't have both. Darkness does not exist in the presence of light. That's why if you embrace the darkness that is religion and politics, you can't be with God. You see, there is no darkness in the presence of light. Where there is light, there is no darkness. Where there is darkness, there is no light. This is all about choice and separation. And that brings us to this Hebrew word, bien, which was translated here from. But the primary meaning of bien is understanding. So God is saying that he saw and he wants us to perceive that the light, the or, is good, and that this separation of light from darkness is something that will enhance our understanding. The more we understand the difference between light and darkness, and that light is good, and that Yahweh has presented himself in association with light, the more we will understand who God is and what he's offering. He's offering to make us children of light. You know, it's kind of funny that science has come to realize that physically, materially, we are the products of stars. We are stardust with a soul. That our very material nature is the byproduct of an exploding star. Some star some time ago exploded, created not only our sun and solar system, but we are materially stardust. And what God is saying is that when we embrace Him, when we choose to separate ourselves from that which is material and embrace His light, we become light all over again. All who avail themselves of the light are called out of the darkness and separated unto Yahweh. This is one of a dozen times that separation and division are discussed in Yah's opening statement in Bereshith at the beginning of the Torah. There are two additional aspects of this statement that I'd like to consider. First, darkness isn't the opposite of light, it is the absence of light. So darkness is not the absence of light, it is the absence of light. It's not the opposite, it's the absence. Okay? For example, Hasatan isn't the opposite of Yahweh. He is the absence of Yahweh. You see? Death isn't the opposite of life. Death is the absence of life. Second, the dark spirit's deceptive arsenal is itemized in Hosek. He wants to conceal rather than reveal himself. Hasatan doesn't want to be worshipped as the adversary, which is Hasatan means the adversary in Hebrew. He doesn't want to be considered as the absence of God. He wants to be considered as God. He wants to be worshipped as God, not as the absence of God. He lurks in the shadows, therefore, behind the scenes, obscuring his true nature and purpose. His religious and political schemes, are seldom considered satanic, for if they were, they wouldn't be seductive. Christianity is a religion that was conceived by Paul, who was demon-possessed by his own admission. But the moment that Paul goes beyond saying that I'm demon-possessed to telling you that my inspiration all came from Satan, he ceases to be seductive. So even though he claims to have been demon-possessed in the second letter to the Corinthians, admits to it, and while all of his testimony is opposed to Yahweh, which makes him the adversary, he wants you to believe that his inspiration came from God, because the adversary wants to be not the absence of God, but he wants to be worshipped as God. These are important insights as we consider our relationship with Yahweh. We'll be back in a moment.
Can heart...
Back to Shattering Myths. We're talking about the darkness represented by Satan. Most people are unaware that Satan is the founder of the Christian religion, of the Islamic religion, because they don't see those religions as being occultist. But you see, Satan doesn't want to be worshipped as Satan. He doesn't want to be known as Satan. He doesn't want to be the adversary. He doesn't want to be the absence of God. He wants to be God. And so he presents himself not as Satan in his religion, but instead as God. He is clandestine, wrapping himself in the beguiling institutions of religion and politics, in mystery and secrecy. He preys on ignorance. A confused and distracted society is his sandbox. The reason darkness and separation now are making a second appearance in the first day is to highlight the choice that we are all invited to make, to choose God or the adversary. The choice remains paramount to Yahweh because it is a prerequisite of love. The covenant requires choice for that relationship to be genuine. Bringing it all together, bereft of the Hebrew text and extensive amplification, Yahweh's salutation to humankind reads as follows. In the beginning, the Almighty created, was alongside and closely associated with the spiritual world and the material realm. And the physical world existed as a formless, orderless, and empty void, obscured in darkness, along with the presence of a great commotion and inaccessible and mysterious energy. The Almighty's Ruach His spirit hovered over, ministered to, and cleansed, expanding and causing the growth according to the presence of the waters. God said, let there be light, and light existed. The Almighty saw that light was good, and God separated light from darkness. With each word fully magnified, God's opening salvo reports in, which is near, with, in the proximity to, and regarding the account of the beginning, Reshith, the start of time, the initiation of the process of our existence, concerning God's first fruits and the head of the family. The Almighty, Elohim, created, bara, conceived and produced, brought into existence, providing renewed birth, planning and preparing, producing, and was alongside and closely associated with the spiritual world, Shamayim, which is the heavens and the abode of God, and the material realm, matter, the physical and natural world, Eretz. And the physical world, Eretz, the material realm, existed as a formless, that's tohu, in a state of lifeless confusion, orderless and empty void, bohu, deserted and unoccupied space, desolate of life, obscured in darkness, chosek, ignorance and obscurity without light, along with the presence of the panhe, the appearance of a great commotion, an inaccessible and mysterious energy, to whom the Big Bang, that which is agitated. The Almighty's, Elohim's, Ruach spirit, the manifestation of Yah's divine power from the Hebrew Ruach, which that means which can be accepted and is acceptable, that which can be experienced, which is delightful and aids in perception and understanding, that which brings relief, renewal, and restoration, a feminine noun in Hebrew, hovered over, ministered to, and cleansed, expanding and causing to grow, according to, this is from Rakoff, according to the presence of the waters Mayim. And as we have learned, the nurseries for stars was molecular clouds of water. God, Elohim, said, Amar, let there be Haya, let there exist light or, and light existed, Haya. Haya is the basis of Yahweh's name. It means to exist. In the first person, it means I am, I was, I will be. The Almighty Elohim saw, Ra'ah, now that there was light, perceived that the light was good, a derivative of Tob, that which is pleasant, cheerful, and agreeable, beautiful, valuable, beneficial, generous, and prosperous, reliable, and true. And God said, or separated, I should say, Badal, light from darkness for the purpose of providing understanding from BN. Tremendous insights in God's opening salvo. And from there, let's continue to focus on the concept of light, because God will say more about this topic, telling us about the importance of light and the role that it plays in not only our lives, but in our understanding of who He is and what He is offering to us. I'm Yada. This is Shattering Myths. We'll be back in a moment. Shattering Myths. We're talking about the opening salvo that Yah shared with us about the first epoch of creation, God's creative testimony. We have learned was accurate when He revealed that cosmologically time began the moment energy became matter. Before the conversion of energy into matter, time did not and could not exist. In fact, Yahweh's suggestion that the material realm was formless, orderless, and initially in this regard, it syncs with current scientific thought, whereby matter is considered to be nothing more than organized energy. And so prior to the creation of that which we would consider matter, the material world, that the material that would be used to comprise it was formless and orderless. It became ordered, and then energy was transformed into matter. Also noteworthy, Bar-Rashith indicates that before Yahweh created the light energy which would become the cosmos, there was a lifeless, purposeless void. Scientists are in lockstep confirming that before the Big Bang there were no physical laws, no matter or life, only a powerful source of energy. Furthermore, we know that the inception of the universe was incredibly chaotic. In the beginning, light, which is literally separated from darkness, photons, in this particular case, broke free as electrons were liberated. But even today, light remains supreme. There are a billion photons in the universe for every particle of matter. God's testimony, let there be light, and there was light, is consistent with our observable reality. And also, so is today, this separation between light and darkness. We can quantify that which is light. That is the material realm that we can quantify. By its energy, we can quantify 4% of what comprises our universe, that which is visible, light. But this separation still exists with the darkness. Dark energy and dark matter, that which is invisible to us, that which man is even calling darkness, represents 96% of the universe. There is still this enormous separation between the two. And man's inability to understand what is dark matter and dark energy. Although we do now know a great deal about what is light. Also noteworthy, as we continue to review this material from God, is that according to scientists, the universe began somewhere around, now they say now with great precision, that it began 13.772 billion years ago, because they're measuring the cosmic microwave background radiation, and they've noticed the stretching of the wavelength, which says that the universe is, at least from the point of the Big Bang, that God speaks of also, is 13.772 billion years old, plus or minus some 50 million years. Well, you've got two problems with that. One of those problems is that that we have now recently discovered cosmic microwave radiation that dates past the Big Bang. The Big Bang is just the point where we can measure things and measure the commencement of the universe, but there was a time before the explosion, and we now know that that time existed, and therefore the creation event that led to the explosion is greater than the calculated number of 13.772 billion years. We have another issue. The other issue happens to be the nature of light itself. Come to find out, the speed of light is not a constant. We now have two independent tests affirming that the speed of light is slowing. Now, what that means is that our measure of time, of universal time, of the time going back to the Big Bang, is being stated as much greater than it actually was. We know that over the last 200 years that the speed of light has slowed by as much as 7%, and that it now appears that the speed of light from the point of the Big Bang to now has slowed at a rate of 10 to the 10th power. That's an enormous change, because we measure time by light. You know, time becomes a dimension when you understand the nature of light, and what we are learning is that there, rather than being 13.77 billion years, it could have been 10 to the 10th power less time than that. So from our perspective looking back, it is quite difficult to ascertain the amount of time to creation. And when I wrote the initial Genesis accounts, I just used 15 billion years for a rough estimate. And the reason I did so is because it was apparent that the math associated with the 13.772 and the great precision that that was providing was based on invalid assumptions, and that there are so many other ways to measure the genesis of our universe, most of which coalesced right around 15 to 16 billion years of age, that 15 sounded like a reasonable number to work with, always saying that it was plus or minus 10 to 20%. But now, all of that may be thrown into question because the implement of measurement, light, which defines time, is not a constant. Now, on Earth, looking back, regardless of how we measure time, it was a very long time ago. But if you were a witness to creation, it was not a very long time ago, because we still know for certain that on a photon of light, time simply exists, and the faster one travels or in the presence of great energy, that time slows, and it slows appreciably. So the Creator's perspective of his creative process occurring over what would be perceived as 6 days relative to his point of reference at creation is actually equivalent to the 14 to 16 billion years that have transpired from our perspective looking back. Both Yah's testimony and science suggest that the first universal epoch, that of initial galactic formation, lasted about 7 or 8 billion years from our vantage point, which is 1 24-hour day measured from the relative position of creation looking forward. So how could that be possible, you wonder? How can 7 billion years be equivalent to 1 24-hour day? Well, light, which was the subject of the first day, is the eternal timekeeper. That's why time is being thrown up into question by this realization that the speed of light has not been a constant. Its wave aspect, the wave aspect of light, allows man to measure time anywhere, even near the place where time began. But to appreciate this, we must first understand what time is. And for that, the best place to turn, well, apart from Yah's Torah, is to Albert Einstein. He brought forth the theory of general relativity, which establishes the relationship between light, mass, energy, space, and time. He was the first to discover that the rate which time passes is not the same at all places. Differences in mass and velocity radically affect the rate at which time flows. This aspect of the general theory of relativity has been so thoroughly verified that it is considered to be an established physical law. The only aspects of relativity in dispute are those related to quantum mechanics, to the lack of cause and effect, even certainty at the subatomic level, and whether or not gravity is a force or an effect. According to the theory of relativity, that gravity is not a force but is an effect. It is caused by the bending of the fabric of space-time. But when it comes to the realization that time is a dimension, not a constant, and that it has a rate of flow that is relative to the observer, there is no dispute. We prove this every day with our satellites, with the GPS satellites, for example. Because of the speed that they travel, if we did not adjust for the slowing of time on those satellites, because the GPS system is all based upon time. It measures the time that signals are received by the units from various satellites, and therefore the time that it takes for the signal to be received from three or more satellites determines where you are. Well, the only way that those measurements work is if we adjust the clocks on the satellites to speed them up relative to clocks on the Earth on our receiving units, because the clocks on those satellites are moving at a great speed. And as they move at a great speed, time slows on them. So even in mechanical instruments, very precise mechanical clocks, both in the satellites, the GPS satellites, and on the receivers here on Earth, unless we adjust for the fact that time slows in the presence of velocity or mass, our instruments become invalid. The pace of time at a location with greater mass, greater energy or velocity, is slower than the pace which time is experienced with diminished mass, energy, and velocity. We confirm this shift by measuring the 2 parts per million a light wave is stretched emanating from the presence of the greater mass of the sun relative to light generated here on Earth. And I'll explain that when we return to the last segment of Shattering Myths in a moment. Back to the final segment of Shattering Myths this morning. For those who are wondering, why in the world is this guy, you know, so fixated on trying to explain time when he's trying to reveal the creation account and explain God's testimony to us? And it's because once you come to understand time, the floodgates are open to understanding so much more. Once you understand time and light, which is the measure of time, then everything else falls into place. Now, let me give you an example. You know, if you think of two trains, both moving at 100 miles an hour on the same track, but directly at each other, their closing speed would be 100 miles an hour plus 100 miles an hour, 200 miles an hour. But now on the same two tracks, let's shoot two powerful lights. And we turn on those two lights, and the light beams are intersecting each other at 186,000 miles per second. And they're coming at each other at that speed. So wouldn't their closing speed be twice the speed of light, since you've got these two light beams both moving at the speed of light towards each other? And the answer is no. And the reason is because on either of those photons of light, time does not flow. It simply exists. And so relative to the photon of light, where time simply exists and does not flow, you would observe the other photon of light coming at you at its normal speed. But you have no sense of movement, because movement speed is a function of distance over time. But on a photon of light, time simply exists. It does not flow. So there is no gap in time. There is no measure of time. And therefore, on the photon of light, as relative to that photon of light, that you are not closing on the other photon of light at twice the speed of light, because from your perspective, you're not moving. That's the essence of the spirit of the theory of general relativity. Now, why is this important to us? Because once you understand what time is, and that time, that as light, time simply exists, that on a photon of time, that the past, the present, and the future exist simultaneously, then you understand the verbs that make up the uniqueness of the Hebrew language. Once you understand the correlation between light and time, you understand that God cannot die. So this death on the cross is a myth. Once you understand the nature of light and its relationship to matter, you recognize that Paul lied when he said the totality of the Godhead resided bodily on Yosha. That's a physical impossibility. Energy, light, is not equivalent in scale to matter. That's why the equation is E equals mc squared, with c being the speed of light multiplied by itself, times matter to be equivalent to energy. That's why he is a diminished manifestation of Yahweh, which means he is of absolutely the same substance, but radically, radically, radically diminished. Once you understand the nature of light and time, you understand how God proved that he authored his Torah. Because it's filled not with predictions of what's going to occur. Because God exists as light, he has already witnessed our future and reported our future to us in our past so that he could prove his authorship. That he could prove without any doubt that he exists and that he authored the Torah, his guidance to us. When you understand light, you understand why bodily resurrection is counterproductive. You don't want to go and spend eternity. In fact, you can't spend eternity as matter. Matter, all matter degrades. You want to spend your eternity like God. That's why we become like him and become like light, because spiritual energy is a preferable, it's an empowered position. You come to understand the benefit of the covenant, which is to be empowered by God, being transformed and empowered by moving, transitioning from that which is material to that which is energy. All of these things make sense. When you understand the correlation between light and time, you understand the Genesis account. That God can say it took six 24-hour days to create the universe. And relative to his perspective at creation, it did. And that can be billions of years for us looking back. Once you understand light, you know how God makes us immortal. And you know how we're going to be able to enjoy the new universe that he is creating. Everything falls into place. And with light, you can be observant. You can come to be in. Understand concepts extraordinarily important to our relationship with God.
I'd seen the longevity products work for many others, and so I bought a bunch of them, started using them, had a little bit of results, but I wasn't following the regimen every day. But Aaron Dykes in my office.